somebody has an interesting question, it would be really nice.
Of course I'm the boss, of course I'm the manager, but at 3 o'clock my influence in the game is nothing.
A coach is somebody who should see a lot of things. I think the most important things are your eyes in coaching.
Colin.
Colin.
Yes.
Welcome inside the coach's room.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting.
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me. Well, it's my honor to have you. We already been WhatsApping for a while, like most guests, but we found some moment. We found a moment in between sessions, actually.
Yeah. In the afternoon, we have to go again.
Okay. So we have an hour. We have to stick to the hour. Otherwise, we are in big trouble. No. we'll make sure. Yesterday, I posted a photo of you on Instagram, and my intern is next to me. He said, the guy is a fucking beast. So I don't think you're the stereotype performance coach, but at least you look like it.
Yeah, that's what I hear quite often. Like, at least I'm a good example for the guys in the gym.
Yeah.
Because I can show the guys what is hardworking over there as well.
Okay, yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. But I had to mention it. What kind of office are you? Are you at the club and in your own office, or how is it organized?
At the moment, I'm in at the club, but we're in free working space office. Normally, we're sitting in the coach's room, literally. What's the name as well? And in there, we are sitting with the whole technical and part of the performance stuff. We're sitting there. And there we have one big table, and we're sitting and working from that one table. And from there we
make the sessions, everything. Yeah. Okay, great. What is the most essential item you have there?
Yeah, this, for me, it's my whiteboard.
Okay.
It's the one of the few things I could keep when we change tables.
Yeah.
I have one big one behind me. In the first year, I had two big ones because every time I have some idea of something comes up, I write it down directly. Some things they will stay up there for a year. Some things will go off fast. But from material wise, that is a really important thing. And of course, you're talking about laptop and the main man, like the head coach and the assistant coaches are sitting around me. But my whiteboard, I had to mention.
What was the last thing you wrote on it that was something you had to remember? Or we're not asking you to give away any secrets, but what was the thing you thought of and maybe interesting to share?
Yeah, it's this, we're working on making our performance plan in total, so we're constantly developing, and we had three things, and I wanted to keep these three things in the center of our plan, and I came up with the word, and then I came up with these three stages. The first one is completion, the other one is retention, and the other one is prevention. And those three stages you have in training or personal development. So I put them literally on the center of the board, and because I thought, okay, everything that comes up from here needs to be connected to one of those three things. So that's what the last thing that I wrote.
Okay, so now when a thought comes up and it doesn't connect with the three goals of your sessions, it doesn't get on the board.
Yeah, it gets on the board, but on the right side, on the bottom.
Ah, okay.
Corner, and then it's for evaluation on a later moment.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. So these are three types of session, or is it all implemented in one session?
The main focus from us should be amplitie. So this is literally from the Latin word, and it is focused on getting better. So you have a starting point and you want to improve. And this is the main focus of our whole performance plan. We're never wanna look towards prevention, because in our opinion, prevention happens when you focus on amplitie.
Yeah.
So and they're just make the guys stronger, makes the guys more resilient, and then the rest will follow. The same is with retention, because if you want to keep people on the same level, in our opinion, over time, the level will decrease. So in there we say, okay, we have to keep focusing on getting better, and then from there on, the rest will follow. The same as that if we have the whole group, we want to focus on not only on the weak side of the group,
yeah,
we love to focus more on the good side of the group, the stronger guys, and that the rest needs to work their way up to there.
Yeah,
we think it's a waste to bring the guys down to a level of the lowest standard of the group or the middle standard of the group, because I think the most strongest and the most fit guys and the best quality players should be the benchmark of the group.
Interesting approach, I think, because I think the safest way is to be in the middle.
Exactly.
And you specifically say, no, we want to focus on the top and the rest has to keep up, of course, in a safe way, because you want to prevent as well that they're injured. But that's your approach.
Yeah. The same when we do exercises. You get almost a death penalty when you say, hey, we're doing prevention exercises here at the club. Okay. I'm a little bit exaggerating, of course, but when you talk about prevention, you're talking about the fear of getting an injury.
Yeah.
And in our mind, it's just, if you just keep focus every day on getting stronger, and then you're just focused on getting stronger adductors, for example, or stronger hamstrings, if this is your focus, prevention is already in there.
Yeah.
But if you would call it prevention, you go, the first thought in your head is focused of not getting injured, because you want to prevent something from happening. And in our head, we just want to focus on getting better, getting stronger hamstrings, because stronger hamstrings will also help you to run faster, have faster deceleration, faster change direction. So the focus should be on that part.
Yeah, so it is. Okay, some other coach could call it prevention, but it's the same exercise, but it's typically almost the language and the mindset you use around it, which makes a difference also for the player, perhaps, while he's doing it.
Yeah, we believe in that, really, because we think in that mind, we keep it in the mindset of keep doing more stuff. I will get back to that in the end of in our meeting when we talk about my favorite book.
Yeah.
We talk about Anti-Fragile. And here you talk about, okay, use the body, use the muscle, use the mind in order to shake it up, to learn from it, to maybe sometimes fall down. But we know that we're human beings, so we can adapt. So we'll get back stronger. And if everything that we do is from that mindset on, we believe in that you get the right focus and the right mentality in training as well.
Okay, interesting. You're already talking about your personal connection, because it's clearly there. We'll save the book for the end.
Yeah.
But how does it connect to your personal style? Because, you started out somewhere, and somewhere along the road, you found maybe that this was a way that connected to you, and you implemented it in your daily work, or did somebody talk to you? Okay, Colin, you need to change. You need to think more forward. Whatever. How did this became your style?
When I was younger, I worked in a physio practice in Amsterdam. PhysioMed was called.
Yeah.
Directly when I was younger, I got more and more influenced by the physio side of the. Of the whole football world,
yeah.
But when I was 16, I worked in a physical in a fitness center in Woerden, where I came from, and there I was just more or less focused on people just getting stronger.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of influence from both worlds, and from the physio side, in the beginning, the focus is really on prevention, because that's where they earn their money. But on the other hand, I came in there and I thought, hey, but I don't want to get my people to get injured. No, I just want them in a normal, healthy situation. I am not in the picture. So what would be better than preventing them, just to help them get stronger so they will never come to me? So maybe I'm doing the wrong job.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. So I think, okay, how can I influence this? Then I thought, okay, then I have to be with the players themselves and not in an local or in practice in Amsterdam. Now I have to be with a team, because then I can influence them on day-to-day basis, and then I can help them stay away from the hospital or from the treatment room.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that the the last insights in the physio world also connect with that. So they add to my bias in that way.
Yeah. PhysioMed has the, how do you call it? Be fit, stay fit, top fit kind of route, right? Which connect your part connects, I think, with the second and the third step mostly, I think.
Exactly. So in there, already that connection. But what I said, and the latest practice is also is that pain is not directly only related to directly muscle damage or knee damage or other. Pain is something else. Pain comes from is from the mind, and that insight made it very clear that to influence somebody's beliefs, you really should focus and start with connecting with the mind of the players. So this whole part of influencing the total player, so with nutrition, with sleep, with connection, personal personal connection, this whole picture together is in the end what makes our total player development program. And in there, a beautiful side effect is that they get stronger and they stay away from injuries.
Yeah.
If we follow up all these things.
So this is the steps that influenced you, and maybe certain people influenced you as well, and maybe inspired you at some point.
I had great mentors, like a lot of colleagues at PhysioMed, colleagues from Sport City where I worked before, but from PhysioMed was the work ethic there over there.
Yeah,
really inspired me a lot. Like, you have to be ready for whatever comes for the player. The player has to be in the middle.
Yeah,
and there I learned.
I recognize Leo style in that story.
Exactly, he's an example of that as well. But I had other colleagues. There's like 8 guys over there I work closely with. They really inspired me a lot. And from there, I noticed directly if I want to make a difference, because these guys are already great. So how can I get to their standard, and how can I be better? Then I think you have to do more and better and those things together, and then in the end find the right people to work with. And they gave me also the freedom to work at a football club in Amsterdam. So I tried to find it to learn and develop on my own when I was only 20 years old, and I could work with an amateur team and really work with them to help develop a mini version of a performance department over there.
Yeah.
So we started working with exercise before and after, and starting working with incorporated treatment, and not only treatment on the bench like massage, like what was happening only before. No, a training. Training is the best best treatment.
We have to. I think listeners have to realize that this is okay. It was a selection or a first team.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was also a couple of good friends that know how to play, and they weren't maybe the best example of a performance minded group. I can imagine. Okay, they were not. I know some guys from the team, which is a purely coincidence, not to name drop. But so you came in, I think, an intelligent group. Yeah. But if they didn't have to do the exercises, they wouldn't bother at all. So
exactly.
So it's interesting to see how you use that as your almost your test lab for your own way of working.
Exactly, I learned there, besides the skill of training and treatment, etc., I learned the skill of connecting with the people.
Like,
if I look at my own development, this part of connecting with the players, connecting with the staff, so like the trainer, this part and this period in Amsterdam really helped me a lot, because in there you have a group. I think the total group was 40 players even.
Okay, yeah. First and second team.
First and second team. Total guys from total different background, different age, different motivation. Guys that were really serious and still wanted to make it in professional football. But on the other hand, guys that were like only in there for fun.
Yeah.
And there you learn to connect with everyone. And you have to inspire and reach everyone. So that was a great period for me.
So you were there, you coming from a small town, you were a personal coach, personal trainer, then you went to PhysioMed, which is one of the top organizations in the Netherlands, and they placed you, I think, at the club, if if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And there you came as a young guy, and then you were, before the training, you were on the bench. And then 10 minutes before training starts, you had to put the cones on the pitch, do the sessions. I can't imagine it went like this. You run out, okay, but you were blind. No, I'm not saying you were blind, but you were ambitious. You just wanted to do everything. That's how it started.
Exactly. And I already had the idea that I want to inspire people and help people reach their goals.
Yeah,
that's some personal goal for me. Like, what is making me happy in my life is I know when other people reach their goals. So when I can help somebody in some way to reach their goal, maybe it's in an easy way to that I directly notice that I will help them. But I also hope that there are guys that maybe when they look back at the beginning of their career or when they look back at their period at Heracles or at the other club, that they think shit. This guy helped me in the end. He wanted to. He had the best ideas with me, and he wanted to help me.
What? So, 20 years old, full of ambition, running your ass off, and then you have this guy on the table, 33, end of his career, just likes to play ball, whatever. He doesn't. Yeah. Well, I'm not saying he doesn't care. Of course, he's there, and now you have this group that are maybe much closer to your own style of personal, personal ambition, maybe more, it's a more performance environment.
Yeah.
What was the most interesting that you learned in that step at Buitenveld working with these guys? Because I can imagine that coaches that are listening that just stepped maybe into senior football or coaches that are working at a less performance environment also have these types of players. So you need to find a way to connect and not be overambitious and say, okay, we're going to do 5,000 squats before the session and then we'll start. You lose them straight away.
Yeah.
How did you approach that? What did you learn, maybe even better?
Yeah, first of all, what I directly noticed was you have to be clear on your intentions. So what do I want to achieve here? So what do we want to achieve?
Yeah.
And then from there on, what was really important is, okay, what is my behavior and what is my task in this? So what will I do to help achieve this? So it could be 1,000 squats, whatever, as an example. Then the guys know, okay, this is what he's going to do and this is what he's going to bring to us. Okay, if I don't want this, now I can raise my hand.
Yeah.
Because that's directly something I tell. I will be consistent throughout the whole year. It can be, the world can crush it down, but I will keep doing the same. So you can expect always the same behavior from me. And then what I noticed is like the connection of the goal from a player from 32 years old at Buitenveld, or the connection of the goal what a player from 18 years old here at Heracles wants is exactly the same. And then I mean they want to play football, they want to have fun, and they even a guy from 32 years old is wants to improve. If he has a slight chance, he wants to improve. Maybe he doesn't be pushed that hard. But in the first conversation you have with somebody, you notice this. So then you know, okay, I'm backing off. But if an 8-year-old guy comes and says, hey, Colin, I want to go to Real Madrid and I want to do this, this, and this, and this.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, do you really want to do this? Yeah. Okay. Do you know what is going to happen when you're not doing it one day? Yeah. Okay. And you know what is going to happen when you're not doing it 2 days? Yeah, I know that. And I'll come back. Okay. What do you want from me? Yeah, I just want you to help me 9 out of 10 times. Okay, how do you want me to help you? Like this conversation is so important to set the boundaries because from there on, I directly, with every player I have this conversation, they will notice for me and they know for me, I will give and will 100%, I push them every day 100%. And I always tell them, hey, wait, one day, now we're laughing and having fun, but it's going to be one day or maybe 2 days or maybe a whole week that you're tired or you slept bad or you have a fight with your girlfriend or you went out, I don't care, but you come here and you do one step less and then I'm on your ass. And that moment you think, Colin, one day. No, this day, this is the moment that we're going to make the difference together. Then my help comes in and I will pick you up from the ground, and we're still going to keep working and doing that extra little bit. Where other people, in my opinion, this is the difference between good players and great players, where other people will stop. That's the moment where we keep pushing, and we are keep try to make the difference. And this consistency and this direct approach works, in my opinion, on every level. And then when there are guys that don't want that, you have to know it on forehand. And if you know it in the beginning of your working relationship, then you have to adjust your behavior to that as well.
Okay. So you have it starts with, it could be any, it could be a moment that you sit down together, or maybe he kind of steps in your room for the first time or whatever. There's a reason that you have the discussion, and then you meet each other, you set each other's expectation. That's, that's where it all starts.
Yeah, because this is what quality is in the end. Because if you walk into a store and you walk into a low budget store, you walk in there with expectations that there maybe are boxes on the ground. But you, when you walk into a store where, for example, the lowest toothpaste is 20 euros, you don't expect boxes on the floor. So this is only based on perception. And in there, they can ask me as well. If I'm dropping down one penny, one point somewhere along the route, maybe food is not good, maybe the rest is not not good enough, they can come to me. And they can come to me the first time, hey, Colin, why is not fixed? Then I'm the first one to say, hey, you have a good point here. Let us fix it for next time. Thank you. I will learn now as well. Next time you make a mistake, I will also not burn you down. No, we do it to learn, and then we learn together.
Yeah. How do you connect? Because you told me in the at the club where you started, you had a lot of freedom from the coach. Now you were in an environment. I don't know how the situation is now, but how do you connect that approach? Because it's connected to the coach's work almost 100%. Yeah. How do you connect that story? Is it a sit down together, or is it separate and you tell, or how does it work for you?
Just as well, setting the right frequency. So I sit that together with the coach. I explain my vision.
Oh, sorry. I mean, in relation to the player, maybe we can go to your connection with the coach is also very important. Or are you already going there? Sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the coach now.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. I won't interrupt you.
I can also go to the connection with the players first.
So if you have that discussion with the player, so you have to sit down with the player, and basically he's telling you, I want to be just as beast as you, and you're saying, I'm going to pick you up every time. But there is a connection with the daily work of the coach as well. So how do you make sure that everybody's on the same track? That's maybe my question.
I can go there along the route because it is something we discuss as a group. We discuss also every player as a group. So everybody knows from each other where we will be working on a player. Yeah. But on the other hand, with our performance department, we also say, hey, let us work also alongside the coaches. So we'll be, because the general focus of the performance department is less focused on short term as what the coaches are doing.
Yeah.
And because it's less visual. So if one guy is doing, a squat, and the squat is not as good as on this week on Wednesday as on next week on Wednesday, we can work around that and make sure that next week is better. But for the coaches, it's directly visual, their work on Saturday in the stadium. So what we will do sometimes is we'll work just alongside them, so we'll not be slowed down by the process of the short term. But we constantly evaluate. What I said is we were sitting on one table. So as directly after we finish the conversation with a player, or when we work with a player and something came up, we sit down and directly share it with the group. So everybody knows what's up with the players. And then the coaches know as well if something needs to be discussed with this player. We could say, sorry, this afternoon he's not free because he's working with us over there. And that's also okay.
So there's clear communication. If you look at it literally, there's an open table, so there are no small rooms. So you have everything you say is heard by everybody at the same time. Interesting and almost logical, but it well, been a head coach myself. We had a very good physiotherapist who also did the performance training before the training session started. So it was very important that you have that connection as well, and that they also are open enough and are on the same track as you to the players, and that they use the same rules and they use the same same language exactly. And that there needs to be unity also in this. And with an assistant, it's sometimes easier because it's more football related. And I'm not saying it's the right way, but as a coach, you feel a little bit, sometimes you feel a little bit more connected because you can talk about tactics.
Yeah.
But the influence of the performance staff is so big and so important that you need to be on the same page all the time.
Yeah, and the maybe get back in this as well. Like what we noticed, the difference between the performance staff and the assistant coaches is not as big as it was before as well.
Okay.
Because the influence of the team culture, we almost work more one-on-one with the players than the assistant coaches do.
Yeah.
The same is for the medical staff that is inside the performance department. So that's why the development of the team culture, we really look at as a whole system. So we sit together with technical director and we're planning out, okay, what is important? What kind of vision do we want to have? What's our KPIs and how are we going to bring it on to the players? And this is something we do as a whole team. But even if you look at the connection with the head coach, maybe this is something not all the physical coaches do. What we are also doing is we're also using video clips to influence the players.
Okay.
Because if you look at biomechanical analysis, is when you look at a 11 against 11, like a game, a normal football match, this is the moment they are being judged. This is the most important thing.
Yeah.
So when you want to test a player, this is where you have to get your information from. So what we often do is we're also on the bench with tagging and tagging clips as a physical staff. So we're looking at for example, at a defender. How is he approaching a player? Okay, is he breaking on the right moment? What is his body position? What's the position of his head at that moment? Where is keeping his hands for his balance? And we are taking a moment like this to then later sit maybe together with the player and say, hey, if you're coming to the player, break a little bit faster, go a little bit more down, but keep your upper body up. So when he's playing the ball alongside you and you have to sprint, you can react a little bit faster and you can produce more force into the ground. And talking like this, or even for defenders in a one-against-one situation where they have to use their arms or their body, we can analyze from a biomechanical standpoint, okay, what is the most effective way to produce force in a duel? So we're looking together with defenders or with attackers when they play a duel or when they are in a change direction. And we're talking also this with the head coach, like, hey, is this a moment where he could use his body more efficient, or he should just, his positioning compared to the space should be different? And then we have a lot of meetings with the head coach as well about this, because it's cool. It's so close to influence the player on the pitch, but it's so close to individual position tactics as it is to individual body skills. So this is so tied together. And sometimes you come to a point and say, hey, when he's running, but he needs to rotate this with his upper body, but he doesn't have enough space in this rotation to do this. So he needs to run with a big turn.
So it's inefficient. Yeah.
It's inefficient. So he has to slide then to get the ball. But what if he's capable of turning a little bit more, then he doesn't need to slide. And then he just can easily take away the ball. Hey, is this a mobility problem? Is this a problem of understanding?
Yeah.
Is it a problem of not able to execute? And then we're analyzing this moment, and then maybe we make it trainable with the player.
Yeah, so you can you pick out the problem or situation. You can isolate almost the movement or the context, and then repeat it and maybe put it in your warm-up or pre-training session where you can do those small. It's literally the 1-2% that make the difference, I think.
Yeah, but if I look, this is are the details we work on with a lot of players. We can, when they come to us in our playing style of our head coach, the pressing is really, really important.
Yeah.
But if you run like crazy towards a player and they take one first touch to the side, you're gone.
Yeah.
So deceleration is one of the most important physical qualities for a football player. So a player needs to have enough strength to decelerate, but also needs to be able to see at what distance he needs to decelerate, but also needs to be able then to, from the deceleration point, to keep his body as straight up as possible to go to left and right. And if those three things are not properly aligned, then yeah, we got some work to do. And we notice that a lot of players, even when they go into a one-against-one duel, for example, or when they need to go into an heading duel,
yeah,
then we can learn them a lot from from what foot you need to push off, where's your hand needs to be, and these things normally they don't get taught when they are in lower levels and or even a different teams. So those are easy wins for us.
Do you think? Oh, there are actually two things come up when you said that. So I see literally the time that you are effectively improving yourself as a professional player increasing a lot. So these are details you can easily do on top of your tactical or technical sessions. This is just extra time, investing half an hour in, let's say, body position, jumping techniques, running techniques, on top of strength, on top of speed. We're going maybe already towards 3 hours training, actively training a day. Yep. Then you have your video analysis on a physical, tactical aspect. So that's a thing that came up. At the same time, it's interesting because the players that arrive in front of your face already have a training that's lasted for 13, 14, 15 years.
Yeah.
And they still lack these details.
Yeah.
Or is it normal that when they come up that these details are just not there?
No, it's it can be two things. So first of all, when we look at scouting, our technical director involves us there as well. So when the new player comes or when they look at the player, they give us video clips as well. Yeah. So then these points.
So you as well. You said so. You are also watching this from a physical or physical perspective. Yeah.
Exactly. So because normally they will say, "Hey, this player is fast," but how can you say the player is fast? Like, is this compared to the opponent, or is he fast because his force reduction is great, or is he fast because of the timing of his run? Yeah. And we are as a physical staff more able to analyze these things. Okay, change direction. What is his body position again? What's position of his hip, position of his foot in this duel, or all those small details where we can look at is first of all in the scouting. And then from there on, we go, we get them on our plate. And when they're on our plate, like, we are just looking in, okay, what are the key points from this player? Maybe we have a player that arrives and needs a lot of work. Yeah. But then I can also give back to a technical director, hey, he's not as good as we thought in this area, but this is doable. We can work on with him.
Yeah.
But I also have another player here, but you guys think he's better, but he has some problems. And I think these are problems that are really difficult to solve. So this will take me maybe a year, one and a half. But the other guy has easy problems to solve. It can take me maybe half a year or maybe 1 or 2 months, maybe only 3 sessions. And then it could be that the technical director says, okay, then I take this one.
Yeah.
Because this one is easier to develop.
Okay, interesting. So that's more from a scouting perspective.
Yeah.
Never realized, first of all, that there was video. And by the way, there's two, let's say, new things. There was, let's say, a biomechanical video analysis. Yeah. Never heard that, which is, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
At the same time, from a physical standpoint, there is influence in the scouting or even decisions as well. It's pretty logical, both, but it never really comes forward in the daily work, or that these are choices in the staff as well. So I think it's pretty innovative, at least that it's out there now.
Yeah, and it's in our opinion, it's logical because you have the people around in your club that are an expert on this area. Why don't you guys use them? And
while I think of it, it's sorry, but it's more and more common that there's a psychological assessment. So you know, okay, what type, this is exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Only different area, I think. Yeah,
exactly. And in there, I don't want to make the final call because I rather have a player coming in the end that he's scoring 20 goals and has a lack of physical qualities.
Goals.
And that's in the end also true. And but then maybe even with this player, I can let him feel what is effective force production, production, or maybe in a duel, one against one, I see him, for example, we often use Tadic as an example when he put his ass into the opponent and his arm away.
Yeah,
this is just a skill. If you can do this and you can hold the ball like this and you can let the team come together, but if you have a player, every time you're saying, yeah, but he can't hold a ball. And then when you put another player on, instead of learning this guy how to hold a ball, these physical things, in my opinion, okay, but how? What is your arm position? Is your arm even strong enough to hold this position? Or what is the position of your front leg? Is it placed into the ground or is it up? Or is there no tension on the front leg? Or these things can help improve a player massively, I think.
Is that also because I read about that your head coach, Frank, he only has to nod, then you know what to do. That's kind of the connection you almost have at this point. Is it also something that you talk about? Okay, guys, this is the playing style we have. Of course, I think you do, but these are the physical needs that my players need to have. For instance, this example of a striker.
Yeah, what we did in the beginning when he came was he came like a teacher, like explaining his vision on football.
Yeah,
everything that is part of that. And what we did at the beginning is just listen. Okay, what does this mean for us as the players? And then later we get into conversations with him, like, okay, but if you want this from a player in pressing, that means that from his physical capacities, it means this and this and this, right? And then we get into the conversation. He agrees with that or doesn't agree with that. And he's really an analytical thinker. He also has his degrees in biodynamics and also in he studied in this sports area, sports degree, sports science degree. So he's really an analytical thinker. So it's, for us, it's easy to explain the steps that are happening, and for him it's easy to come in there because in the end it helps him to achieve his goals with his players. And there's a big line of trust in there, of course. You have to trust the coach. You have to trust the physical coach as well. Because sometimes when you have a small-sided game, the assistant coach will say something to a player. But sometimes I will say to a player as well, hey, listen up. We talked about this. What's your body position? Or, hey, push him a little bit harder. And then let him feel that you're there. And these things are really close to what an assistant coach is doing. But my angle of coaching Q is a little bit different than when it comes from an assistant coach.
Yeah.
But in our world where we connect and talk a lot together, it's working perfect next to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are, you're not almost, you are the assistant coach with the physical biomechanical knowledge, let's put it like that. And the other assistant coach knows the set pieces and another assistant coach knows the playing style. It's almost how it's divided, if I estimate it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's also an interesting role, how to develop yourself in that role.
Yeah.
Because it's a little bit different than being the personal coach that you were 16. I don't know how old you are now. But in this time, you had to develop yourself in all these areas, but still be the specialist in your main area.
Yeah, because I didn't do, for example, university movement science, or I didn't do as you have in Holland, the inspanning fysiologie. I didn't do one of these studies. And normally in my position, there were athletic coaches and there were guys from this university.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it was like the guy that needs to be there needs to be a good teacher. He has his knowledge on physical training, like on a level not only for your grandma, but on the level of an athlete. So this is a big difference. This is often where it goes wrong. But and you have to have the knowledge on how to manage a team and team culture. And all these extra parts alongside my basic study on CEOs and physiotherapy. I learned all those things along the route in just in courses, but also talking with a lot of experts, study books. I read a lot of books on from Banksbo to Verheyen to technical periodization.
Yeah.
Also philosophy books, because they help to increase your to shape your vision. I mean,
yeah.
And in those areas, I just trial and error a lot. I did, and I now do totally different things I did in the beginning when I started in my first year. And the club gave me the space to do that.
Yeah.
Luckily.
There's also something I hear which is very important. The clubs gives you also the space for trial and error.
Which is
pretty daring, I think, because you're talking about players, you're talking about literally salaries that you are trial and erroring with.
Yeah, but you have to deliver. So
I'm pretty sure you do, but that's because you hear a lot of times when things go bad and it's a physical problem, the medical staff gets it.
Yeah.
But it's you have to earn the trust, of course, first, and then get the space, I think.
Exactly, and this was important for my development, but it's constantly learning and constantly learning from new books and from other people. And sometimes when you have a conversation with another physical coach, you learn things that you're already doing. You think, hey, you get some acknowledgement for what you're already doing.
Yeah.
You think, yes, I'm on the right way. And sometimes you have from a meeting from like 2 hours with another coach, you maybe take one thing home, and that one thing can influence your own daily work. And this, sometimes that is enough, and sometimes you have nothing. But it starts with being open and being able to question all the things you're doing every day. Because in my opinion, I don't have the. I'm thinking I'm not doing it perfect at the moment. I hope in 5 years I'm again doing it different than I'm doing it today.
Yeah,
that says something about your own mindset and development, I think.
What was the last time you sat down? Because mainly coaches are listening to this.
Yeah.
What was the last time you sat down with a coach that he showed you something? Okay, this is something I can maybe change or implement, or maybe daily. It's with Frank, but what's something that changed your perspective?
What an easy thing was. Yeah, it's not a lost thing.
Doesn't matter. If it's an interesting thing, that's more important.
It's interesting thing. It was from together with, of course, Frank, because I'm working with him from day to day. That's in a huge library of,
yeah, sure,
of focus points. But as well from Sean Stegeman in the first year when I worked here. His connection that he had with the players, and that the quality of that people are running for him and giving sometimes the players something.
Yeah.
At least letting the players think they get something. It's sometimes a big difference. So when you talk about planned changes, this is something I learned in that period. Like sometimes that you can give the player the feeling like, hey guys, today the last game we're not playing. You guys go in earlier, and the guys think, yes, great, he gave us something. Yeah, he feels for us, he understands us.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the front side, we already knew, hey, the last game we're not gonna play because of this is already enough, and we reached already.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
And in this way, to influence a team based on perspective, and that's what I said in the beginning as well, like rebalancing perspective of players, so give them the feeling like all the time that they are competing, that they are connecting with the players, and they have a sign of freedom. If you have these three things in your daily work, then you can go all the way with the players.
Yeah, so if there's a connection, they go to war for you, and you have to give something back once in a while. You have to give back. That's the most important.
Exactly.
Interesting, but can imagine, because that you are a young gun coming up, and he's much more experienced. He has almost more of a natural feel for that those type of things that you could pick up on it pretty soon. You don't have to always be rigid. No, I'm always ambitious. I'm always going to pick you up. You know, maybe if I give you that maybe one day 5% off, I'm going to get 25% back. Something in that area.
Well, there are two things important in there. Like, one thing I always say, don't come to me when we lose or winning. Like, when you're winning 3-0 from Ajax, don't expect me to do something, give you free the next day or give you less recovery work. Because if I'm doing this, I also should punish you when you lose 3-0 next week. Because this is how it, then the balance is. But I'm not doing either. I'm doing the best thing for you, regardless of the situation. The other thing is give me, that's what I agree with to this player, give me a bandwidth in where we're going to perform. Like, what is the minimal effort that I can get from you? And what is the maximal effort from you? And if you are out of 20 times, you're 18 times here, at 2 times, you're a little bit below average, but you're above the minimal, then I can work with that. But if the exceptions becomes the rule and you're going below your average more than the other way around, then we need to sit down and talk again and we have a different problem.
Interesting.
And then, then you're just talking about behaviors again. Like, what are your basic habits and your behaviors from day to day that help you as a player, or the same as a coach? Coach development works the same. What are your day-to-day habits that will help you to get closer towards your goal?
Yeah. We had, I think, pretty much the same. And I actually stated that as the first rule. So the credits somebody had built throughout the season were the rules you were judged on first.
Yeah.
The second one was being on time. Are you following the rules? But because we had that rule in place, somebody that followed the rules 99% and something happened, he was in traffic jam because of it, not his fault. Then you could say, but this guy already built his credits for throughout the first 3 months. He can get away with this situation. He could not do anything about or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if somebody played 10 great games in a row, he built up his credits, and then one bad game wouldn't get him out of the first 11. And that was my most important. I didn't came up with it myself. I learned it from somebody else as well. But it gives the players the feeling that, okay, I will be there anytime. And if I fail one time, maybe because I had a kid that wake up 3 times in the evening or whatnot, it doesn't matter because I know I'm there. And you can explain it as well to your group, and you can overrule all sender. Yeah, but he was not on time, or we were skipping one cone or whatever. Yeah, okay, but this guy is giving 110% always.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Exactly. Yeah,
it's like a bank account. Every day you deposit a little bit of money on there, and if you make sure you have enough money on there when shit goes down, and then you're still fine.
Yeah, you feel you're. You're throwing a lot of wise words in there. I noticed that it's getting on my guilt feeling because I skipped the gym this morning. I didn't feel like waking up. I mostly try to go to the gym before the kids wake up, so it's pretty early.
Yeah.
But this morning I felt like a pussy this morning. I have to be fair. But if I hear you talking like this, okay.
Next time
I see your face and I know, okay, I'm gonna get out of bed straight away. Okay. What is interesting is that you, you've gained all this knowledge, let's say from your point of view as a physical coach. What do you think the team coaches should know about your field? It's because they are coming up and they have to focus, I think, mainly on relationships and, of course, football itself. But as you come along further, you have to start knowing more about the physical side as well, about the performance side.
Yeah.
What would be your recommendation towards coaches to start investing in this?
Yeah. Well, it's difficult. First of all, talk with experts in the field. This is the easiest thing to do, I think. And when they're open for that, of course, you have to start with that. Podcasts are easy things to learn.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to go into detailing of your planning of your team, these are the questions I get most often when I talk with amateur coaches, for example, or with other coaches. Like, what are how is your week? How do you is your how does your week look like? What are your focus points on? Where's your faceté? I said we don't have a faceté.
Yeah, so faceté in English is, I think, your conditional periodization. Yeah,
football conditioning training.
Yeah,
typical thing in Dutch. And then there, I said we don't have that. Okay, but then why? How do you train the guys then? I said, yeah, basic principles. If you have every exercise that you do in life is based on time and space, then it's based on density. So that's how many reps, how many rests, how many series, based on the mechanical load that you put in there. So are there a lot of twists and turns? Are there a lot of straight running?
Yeah.
And all these things, if you manage this part of your training and you'll make sure you're not under training them, so you really have 2 times a week a good stimulus, that means so at least the game, at least hard training in the middle, and the other days you'll give them constant load, so that means that they have constant stimulus of their body throughout the whole week, then the guys will develop eventually. If they play the game 90 minutes, and we always say here, train like you play, but also play like you train. So it works both ways. So if you play and you play at 100% and you can be 4-0 in front, but if you then make from minute 8 to 19, you still keep the pressure on there, you still make that recovery run, it's the best training, the easiest training there is.
Yeah.
Because you have the volume of a full match. And you have the intensity that you want eventually in a match. So next time when you have a difficult match, you can do a little bit more because you developed based on the match that you had before that.
Yeah.
So in this mindset, these are those things I will always give back to the coaches I speak with.
Okay. And so it starts with structure. Just finding your own structure and don't get caught up in Verheij or Frada, whatever. Start with your own structure. And then make sure the intensity is there. You have your eye, so you can perfectly see what's safe or what's not safe for players. You see when they get tired. Just start with basics and don't try to get caught up too much in schedules or whatever. The basics, I think.
But study everything. So learn from all the experts there are. Because first you have to know the rules before eventually you can start breaking them and build them your own. Because if you have a totally different playing style, so the exercise that you are going to build are going to look totally different than from another coach. And this exercise should reflect your principles. And these principles, if you, for example, have inefficient that you want to press directly after a recovery, but after that you want to go into a low block, that means that you have a high intensity action of maybe 5 to 10 minutes, 5 to 10 seconds, and where there are guys are hunting and trying to get the ball. But after that, they need to make sure there's a recovery run in there. So that means 10 seconds of high intensity work, followed by, let's say, 20 seconds of maybe a long distance sprints to go into a low block, maybe.
Yeah.
So that means that in total, you have 30 seconds. So somewhere along your week, you should have blocks of 30 seconds of high intensity work.
Yeah, to prepare you on these situations. Yeah.
Exactly. And what we often do as well is with a lot of rest. So we really, really love giving the players a little bit more rest than they normally maybe would need.
Yeah. During the sessions, you mean?
During the sessions, because we have a whole season. We don't need to rush and to kill the players in 1 or 2 sessions. Okay. So that's also between the series and between the sets, we always love to give players a lot of rest.
Interesting. Okay, I think a small input. If people have questions on these things, that they pretty much know where to find you, or they can probably reach out. I won't recommend that all thousands of listeners will do this. But no, we'll see. Who ends up. I think if I'm saying it right, let's go to Taleb because that's the writer, right?
Nasser Nicholas Taleb, and then it's from the book Anti-Fragile.
Yeah, no. I always ask the guests, okay, are you a reader and a book? Yeah. And you are. I think you've read a lot of books, if I heard it. Yeah. But you picked this one out. Why?
Yeah, this one is shaped a little bit my philosophy. Okay. Again, what I said, it comes close to my bias of of undergoing some circumstances and getting better out of there. And this is a little bit the center of the book. It goes more into depth, of course, but it's more, philosophical.
Yeah.
And it just it's about that, just creating damage, creating resistance, and you have to overcome this resistance. And this where the it's a thick book of 300 to 400 pages. So you really have to sit down for.
Yeah. It's not a book for late in the evening. It's for the early morning, probably.
Exactly. And another book that I had wrote down is from Mark Verstegen. Every day is game day. If you're looking to start with physical coaching or with performance coaching, this book was one of my first ones, I think, when I was 18 years old. And it gives you a really easy step into the first basics of physical coaching, because they look at fueling for performance, preparing for performance, and performance itself. Like all these stages, they go into depth, they go into the exercises, but also in the detail of the exercise. Not too much detail. It's easy enough to follow. But if you follow this,
it gives you some basics on how to start implementing physical training in your daily training as a coach. Exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting. You read every day, or?
I tend to, really. And I have also, I'm part of a book club with a group of players and old players. I always, every day I go for 25-25, I call it. 25 pages of a book that is more based on information from my field. Like theory books based on human anatomy or something like this. And 25 pages from a book that's more for fun. So that could be
25-25. Never heard that.
But it's more from a roman or philosophy book, something like this.
Yeah. More for relaxing the mind.
Exactly, the one.
Okay.
The theory book you should never read before going to bed. Otherwise,
sometimes I do it and then I don't sleep. That's my problem.
It keeps going then in your mind.
And I have an excuse not to go to the gym, so it doesn't work. No.
Hey, then you should put on the headphones and put on a listen book, audio book.
Yeah, that's true. Although I'm mostly in group classes, so it's a little bit strange if I'm the only one with the earplugs. So, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I love this. Yeah, like, let's see, how do you say that? I think it's discipline. You have the discipline, and you're making sure that the people you work with, you push them as well. I kind of feel it while I'm talking to you. That's why I said I feel bad that I didn't do it, because I know you would. So that's the thing. That's the cool thing I feel. Yeah.
And I hope to bring my people around me in this bandwidth. I hope to inspire them. I hope to inspire the players.
Yeah.
And sometimes they will feel guilty as well, of course. But sometimes I use this guilt feeling to then get an extra training in or to get back from the situation. And sometimes, hey, if you feel like this and this feeling feels shit, do you want this feeling more often or do you want to change something? And then from there, I am there to help them and hold their hand sometimes to change something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can almost feel that you're already pushing people. Yeah. I wouldn't be the player that skips the cone. Hey, you see, you would walk back, look at you, and okay, I'll take the cone. No.
Yeah.
Okay. And who should we get into inside the coach's room next?
Peter Rekes. He's at the moment assistant coach from SC Heerenveen.
Yeah, yeah.
I work with him here in the Heracles. Great guy, great philosophy on coaching as well. Also, the human connection. I learned a lot from him when I came first here at the club. It was very important for me to have somebody besides the head coach.
Yeah.
Sometimes talks with you about stuff that happens in the matches. It helps me understanding the match on an elite level. And also helps me to get into a mind of a professional football player. Because this is something I believe that if you've never been there, you can never completely understand. And he was a professional player before, so he helped to help me understand, like, hey, in this situation, when you have this much of pressure or when you have been training in a preseason like this, you want to do this and this. Okay, yeah, and I said, for example, no, based on physical qualities. We should just do this and this. And then in the end, we came somewhere in the middle where both sides were happy, for example.
Good. Has it helped you shape your ideas more into football context?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. I know he already has his UEFA Pro also, so he's waiting for his maybe he's aiming for his spot to be one of the next pro coaches in the Netherlands. Okay, cool. Hopefully we can get him on. If he listens to this, he feels the pressure, so that's good. Okay, great. No, Colin, we're exactly on an hour, and then you have to get ready also. So no, I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you very much. Great time.
Yeah, I really like that you went from just a physical coach all the way to a performance coach that now is so connected to the playing style of, in this case, your head coach, Frank, and knows how to work with it, involved in almost all areas that now are in modern football around the team. Of course, you are a specialist, but if I talk to you, you also know how to find the elements from the different disciplines around football and to put them in your own work. So that's new for me. The biomechanical video analysis, let's put it like that. It's also new for me. So, very interesting. Thank you, man.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and keep in touch and perhaps do this again.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, man. Speak soon.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.